At 8:30 p.m. on February 6, 2021, gunfire echoed through a quiet street in New Haven, Connecticut. A silver Hyundai rested against the curb, engine still running, headlights slicing through the winter dark. Nearby, a young man lay motionless, Kevin Jiang, 26 years old, a graduate student at Yale and a U.S. Army veteran. To neighbors, it looked like a traffic accident gone wrong. But detectives soon realized this was no random shooting. The crash was deliberate, and the bullets came close after. Within hours, investigators began retracing Jiang's final movements, an evening of church service, a visit with his fiancée, a short drive home. By morning, a single name surfaced again and again among colleagues and online records. Qinxian Pan, a fellow scientist with ties to the same university circle. What began as a tragic collision would unfold into a story of obsession, academic pressure, and the quiet fractures beneath brilliance. Chapter 1: The Collision. It was a quiet Saturday night in New Haven, February 6, 2021. Temperatures had dropped below freezing. The narrow residential stretch of Lawrence Street sat half-lit, a row of old houses framed by leafless trees and snowbanks pressed against the sidewalks. At 8:30 p.m., the stillness broke. A burst of gunfire, several sharp cracks, echoed off the wooden facades. Neighbors called 911 within seconds. One described hearing what sounded like a car crash, followed by rapid pops. Another said the shots came from the driver's side of a silver Hyundai that had just slammed into a parked vehicle. When police units arrived minutes later, they found the Hyundai's headlights still on and the driver's door slightly ajar. The man behind the wheel was unresponsive, slumped forward against the airbag. Officer Daniel Myers reached in to check for a pulse. None. The victim's ID read, Kevin Jiang, age 26. He was pronounced dead at the scene. The first response. Paramedics worked quickly, but could do little. Multiple gunshot wounds had pierced the driver's side window. The impact of the bullets and the subsequent crash made it clear, this was no accident. Investigators began sealing the area with yellow tape as the cold air condensed their breath. A small crowd of residents gathered behind the perimeter. Some whispered prayers, others stood in shock. The neighborhood was quiet again, except for the hum of engines and the static on police radios. Detectives from the New Haven Police Department's Major Crimes Unit were called in. Among the first to arrive was Detective Brandon Hall, who had worked several high-profile cases in the city. He studied the street carefully, skid marks about 40 feet back, shattered glass spread in a fan shape, and a cluster of 9mm shell casings near the curb. This wasn't random, Hall said quietly to another officer. Whoever did this stopped here on purpose. Establishing identity. Within an hour, Kevin Jiang's name began circulating through law enforcement channels. Records showed he was a graduate student at Yale's School of the Environment. He had served in the U.S. Army Reserve, was known for his academic excellence, and had recently become engaged to Zion Perry, another student who had met him through church. Detectives made contact with the university's police department to notify administrators. Yale President Peter Salovey would later issue a statement calling Jiang's death a devastating loss to our community. To understand what led to the shooting, investigators started with a timeline. Earlier that evening, Kevin had attended a small gathering at Trinity Baptist Church, a place where he volunteered regularly. He left around 8 p.m. to drive home. The distance between the church and the scene was less than 2 miles. The question was what happened in those final 15 minutes. Scene work. Crime scene technicians photographed every inch of the roadway. The impact pattern on Kevin's Hyundai suggested it had been struck from behind, not hard enough to disable the vehicle, but enough to jolt it forward and force him to stop. There were no signs of a struggle inside the car. His phone remained in the cup holder, still powered on. Wallet and watch were intact. This ruled out robbery. The shell casings matched a semi-automatic pistol, but no weapon was recovered. One neighbor, a retired teacher, said she noticed a dark-colored vehicle trailing close behind the Hyundai moments before the shots. She couldn't identify the make or model. Another resident's home security camera captured part of the sound sequence. A short impact, then 5 rapid gunshots, followed by the squeal of tires leaving the scene. Investigators marked each casing with yellow placards under the harsh beam of floodlights. Forensic teams began searching the area for tire impressions or footprints in the snow, building a timeline. By midnight, detectives had pulled surveillance footage from several nearby intersections. One camera, located near the corner of Humphrey Street, showed a vehicle matching Zhang's entering Lawrence Street minutes before the incident. Seconds later, another car followed. The second vehicle's headlights flickered briefly, then disappeared from frame. Meanwhile, Kevin's fiancée, Zion, had been contacted by police. Through tears, she told officers that Kevin had texted her at 8:05 p.m. saying he was heading home and that he loved her. It was the last message she received. The case quickly shifted from a possible traffic dispute to an apparent targeted homicide. The victim profile. Detectives built a comprehensive picture of Kevin Zhang's life. Born in Seattle, he grew up in Washington State as the son of Chinese immigrants. He earned his undergraduate degree in environmental science before joining the Army Reserve, where he worked in chemical and logistics units. At Yale, he was completing his master's research in sustainable environmental systems. Friends described him as disciplined, optimistic, and deeply spiritual. He had proposed to Zion just a week earlier, the engagement photos still fresh on their social media pages. There were no records of criminal activity, no disputes, no threats. Everyone who knew him said the same thing. Kevin was kind, careful, and focused. That lack of motive only made the case more puzzling. Early leads. The investigative team mapped out all recent contacts. They examined phone logs, recent messages, and calendar entries. Kevin's evening route was ordinary, church, grocery stop, then home. But his digital history revealed one anomaly. An unknown number had called him twice that afternoon. Both times, the call lasted under 10 seconds. Police traced the number to a prepaid phone purchased in Massachusetts. That clue, though faint, would later connect to a larger network of digital evidence. Another lead emerged from a local auto shop owner who recalled seeing a dark-colored vehicle, possibly a Lexus, parked near the intersection shortly before the shooting. The man remembered the driver wearing a hooded jacket, sitting still with the lights off. The theories. By dawn on February 7th, detectives were split between two working theories. Theory 1, a random encounter, perhaps a traffic altercation that escalated unexpectedly. Theory 2, a premeditated act by someone who knew the victim. The second theory gained weight when the medical examiner reported the grouping of the bullet wounds. The shooter had fired at close range, aiming with precision through the driver's window. That pattern didn't fit spontaneous road rage. It looked intentional. Data and forensics. Technicians extracted data from the Hyundai's onboard computer and Kevin's cell phone. The GPS logs indicated his vehicle had stopped briefly at two intersections on his way home. At each, a second set of headlights appeared in traffic cameras. Forensic analysts cross-checked the shell casings against state and federal databases. The weapon type pointed to a common 9mm pistol, but no immediate matches appeared. The city's shot spotter system, a network of acoustic sensors, confirmed the sound of six shots fired at 8:32 p.m. on Lawrence Street. The timing aligned exactly with the witness calls. Personal context. Within 24 hours, news of the shooting reached national outlets. A Yale student murdered near campus raised intense public concern. University police increased patrols, and the FBI offered technical support for digital tracing. Behind the scenes, detectives began reviewing names from Kevin's professional and academic circle. Among them was Qinxian Pan, an MIT researcher with prior access to Yale labs. At that stage, his name appeared only as part of a contact network, a link through mutual academic projects. Detective Hall noted Pan's presence after another student mentioned he had attended social events in the same circle as Kevin's fiancée. That comment wasn't enough for an accusation, but it moved Pan into the persons of interest list. The fiancée's statement. When interviewed again, Zion described her last interaction with Kevin as normal and loving. She had no idea anyone might wish him harm. She also mentioned that several of her classmates had congratulated them publicly after the engagement photos went up online. Detectives asked whether any of those responses seemed unusual. She hesitated, then said there was one acquaintance who had reacted oddly. Not directly hostile, but distant and tense. The name matched one already on Hall's list, Qinxian Pan. Investigators now had two connecting lines, digital traces near the scene and a personal overlap through academic and social circles, expanding the scene radius. On February 8th, crime scene technicians widened their search perimeter. They canvassed dumpsters, drainage grates, and nearby parking lots for discarded clothing or shell casings. A resident two blocks away turned in footage from a doorbell camera showing a dark vehicle speeding from the scene moments after the shooting. The image was grainy but distinctive enough to show the car's taillights, a pattern consistent with a 2015 Lexus NX. DMV records showed one registered locally, under a visiting researcher's name from Cambridge, Massachusetts. That name was Qinxian Pan. Detectives moved quickly to confirm the vehicle's presence. They located it abandoned behind a housing complex in New Haven. Inside were traces of mud, latex gloves, and a bag of ammunition. The vehicle became the first concrete evidence link. The fugitive trail. When officers attempted to contact Pan for questioning, they discovered he was gone. His apartment in Massachusetts was empty. Digital forensics revealed that his cell phone had been powered off since the night of February 6th. The U.S. Marshals Service was notified, elevating the case to a multi-state manhunt. At this stage, police still could not state publicly that Pan was the shooter. They referred to him as a person of interest, wanted for questioning in connection with the homicide of Kevin Jiang. The media began circulating his photograph alongside that phrase. The academic community, stunned, grappled with the possibility that a promising scientist could be linked to a violent crime. Pressure and silence. Days passed without new sightings. Detectives worked long shifts tracing rental car records, credit card transactions, and interstate toll logs. They discovered that Pan had borrowed a friend's car shortly before the murder and never returned it. That vehicle, too, vanished. The silence deepened the mystery. Had he fled the country? Was he hiding within the U.S.? For the Jiang family, the wait was unbearable. They held a memorial service that week, attended by dozens of fellow students and military colleagues. His mother spoke softly, saying, "Kevin lived with purpose. He believed in service and in kindness. We want answers." The evidence tightens. By mid-February, forensic analysis confirmed that the casings from the scene matched ammunition found in the abandoned Lexus. Investigators traced the ammo purchase back to an online order made under an alias connected to Pan's email domain. This was still circumstantial, but the web was closing. Detectives also found that Pan had access to technical equipment and tools through his lab, including items that could be used to modify a firearm. The picture forming was of a deliberate act, not an impulsive one. Yet the question remained. Why? Chapter 2, The Shadow in the Lab. Approximate, 2,000 words, nonfiction underscore forensic style. By the time dawn broke over New Haven on February 7, 2021, the neighborhood along Lawrence Street had returned to a fragile calm. But inside police headquarters, tension was rising. The case had shifted from tragic to calculated. Every piece of evidence pointed toward intention, the vehicle collision, the shot pattern, and the suspect's quick disappearance. Detective Brandon Hall stood before a whiteboard filled with notes, maps, and names. At the center was a photo of Kevin Jiang, taped above a timeline that stretched from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on the night of the murder. Underneath, in smaller print, the word Pan had been added with a question mark. By then, the name wasn't rumor anymore. It was a lead thin but critical. The academic link. Detectives began to piece together how Qinxian Pan fit into the picture. Public records identified him as a 29-year-old research scientist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He specialized in artificial intelligence and had previously studied at MIT's Mechanical Engineering Department. Through Yale's professional networks, investigators found that Pan and Kevin Jiang had never worked directly together. However, there was a shared connection, Zion Perry, Kevin's fiancée. She had completed undergraduate studies at MIT, where she had known Pan through academic circles and Christian fellowship groups. There was no indication of a romantic relationship, but acquaintances recalled Pan as intensely focused, brilliant, introverted, and sometimes socially detached. Some described moments of awkward fixation when he discussed topics or people that fascinated him. Detectives handled the discovery carefully. Academic connections are often wide, and coincidence alone doesn't imply guilt. Still, when layered against Pan's sudden disappearance, the link was impossible to ignore. The vehicle trail. On February 9th, the investigation broke open further. Forensic processing of the Lexus NX abandoned in New Haven revealed fingerprints and hair samples matching Pan. Inside the glove compartment, technicians found a rental agreement for another vehicle, a blue Honda CR-V, signed under a different name. Detectives checked rental agency logs and discovered that Pan had borrowed the car days before the homicide. When the company tried to contact him after he missed the return date, the phone line was dead. At that point, police filed an official warrant for unlawful flight and vehicle theft. The case had crossed state lines. The U.S. Marshals Service joined the search. Digital forensics. Digital analysts dug into Pan's online presence. Using subpoenaed records, they tracked his last known logins to MIT's research servers and cloud storage. The last access occurred on February 6th, the night of the murder, at 6:21 p.m. 2 hours later, all account activity stopped. His cell phone, too, had gone dark after pinging a tower near New Haven at 8:38 p.m., minutes after the shooting. Investigators expanded the search radius, feeding location data into the National Crime Information Center, NCIC. The results showed no further pings after that night. Pan had effectively disappeared. Profile development. The FBI's behavioral analysts joined the case to develop a working profile. The subject was a foreign-born academic, highly intelligent, and trained in problem-solving. His field required precision and planning, traits mirrored in the execution of the crime. They hypothesized that the motive could involve personal obsession, not professional rivalry. Jealousy, envy, or emotional rejection often served as triggers in similar cases. Detective Hall and his team returned to interviews at both Yale and MIT. A friend of Pan's described him as brilliant, but lonely. Another said, he had trouble moving on when he liked someone. It wasn't violent, just persistent, like he couldn't let go of ideas. None of this confirmed motive. But it built context, the psychology behind the disappearance. The fugitive pattern. Through cross-agency cooperation, investigators began tracing Pan's financial trail. His bank account showed several withdrawals totaling over $19,000 in cash in the weeks leading up to the shooting. He also purchased multiple gift cards, often used to mask spending during travel. Security footage from a Massachusetts ATM captured him withdrawing funds 3 days before the murder. He wore a face mask and cap. The timestamp placed him only hours before he rented the Lexus later found at the crime scene. After the murder, the financial activity stopped abruptly. Public awareness and pressure. As the search widened, the New Haven Police Department held a press conference. Standing before reporters, Chief O'Neill Reyes stated, "We are asking for the public's help in locating Chinxian Pan. He is considered armed and dangerous." The case began appearing on national networks, CNN, NBC, and local Connecticut stations. Yale's community mourned publicly, holding candlelight vigils while campus safety alerts circulated photos of the wanted suspect. For Kevin's family, the sudden attention was painful. His mother released a short statement. "We believe justice will come." Kevin's life mattered. He gave his best to his country and his faith. The pressure on law enforcement mounted. Every day Pan remained at large felt like another unanswered question. The search expands south. By mid-March, new evidence suggested the fugitive had traveled far beyond New England. Investigators traced the stolen Honda CR-V to Duluth, Georgia, where a license plate reader captured it passing through a toll lane. By the time police arrived, the vehicle had been abandoned behind a shopping plaza. Inside were Pan's personal items, a backpack, food wrappers, and notebooks filled with technical sketches. One notebook contained a rough drawing of a firearm mechanism and handwritten notes in Mandarin. The FBI translated and confirmed that the text referred to mechanical tolerances and ballistic testing, suggesting Pan had studied weapon dynamics, possibly in preparation for the crime. Authorities were now convinced he had planned the act deliberately and fled with intent to avoid capture. The quiet months. March passed with few leads. Pan had vanished into the vast geography of the American South. Detectives believed he was living off cash, possibly aided by acquaintances or strangers unaware of his identity. The U.S. Marshals profiled his potential behavior: avoid cities, move often, rent cheap motels under aliases, and maintain silence online. The case began to resemble a chess game, a patient opponent waiting for the next move. Behind the scenes, investigators coordinated with local law enforcement in multiple states, sharing license data, facial recognition leads, and financial watch lists. Each false lead meant long hours and mounting frustration. Breakthrough in Alabama. Then, in May 2021, 3 months after the murder, a tip came from Montgomery, Alabama. Local officers had encountered a man matching Pan's description, living in a room rented under an alias. The individual was polite, quiet, and paid in cash. When questioned casually about his background, he gave inconsistent answers. Officers grew suspicious and checked the name against national databases. Within hours, they confirmed the match, Qin Xianpan. Federal agents surrounded the building that evening. Pan was taken into custody without resistance. Inside the room, officers recovered multiple cell phones, fake identification cards, and $19,000 in cash wrapped in plastic. They also found a loaded handgun. The arrest ended one of the most intense interstate manhunts of the year. The return to Connecticut. When news of the capture reached New Haven, relief rippled through the police department. Detectives who had worked the case for months gathered around screens as footage from Alabama showed the suspect being led away in handcuffs. Chief Reyes issued a statement. "We are grateful to our federal partners and the public for their assistance. This arrest brings us one step closer to justice for Kevin Jiang." Pan was extradited to Connecticut under heavy security. Prosecutors charged him with murder, felony possession of a firearm, and interstate flight to avoid prosecution. His bail was set at $20 million. The legal process, however, was only beginning. The evidence review. Back in Connecticut, detectives organized the mountain of data collected over the months. The timeline was now clear. February 6, 2021, Pan drives from Massachusetts to New Haven in a Lexus NX. 8:30 p.m., the shooting occurs on Lawrence Street. February 7, he abandons the Lexus, switches to a rented Honda, and flees north before turning south through multiple states. February, April, lives off cash and false identities. May, captured in Alabama. Forensic testing confirmed that the bullets recovered from Kevin Jiang's body matched the ammunition found in Pan's possession. Digital evidence, including search history and location logs, tied him to the vicinity of the crime at the exact time of the shooting. Inside the motive. While prosecutors prepared for trial, investigators continued examining motive. Evidence suggested emotional fixation. Pan had shown repeated online searches related to Zion Perry, including her engagement photos with Kevin. He had also accessed academic records and personal details through shared networks. Detectives found no signs of professional rivalry or financial dispute. The motive appeared rooted in obsession, a fixation that evolved into rage when confronted with rejection and distance. During questioning, Pan invoked his right to remain silent. He offered no statement about the crime. The academic shock. At both MIT and Yale, the story triggered deep reflection. Professors and students discussed the thin line between brilliance and instability, between high achievement and emotional isolation. In faculty interviews, several colleagues expressed disbelief. "He was one of the most technically gifted people we knew," said one researcher. "But sometimes genius hides fragility. You never expect it to turn violent." The tragedy forced institutions to examine how mental health, cultural dislocation, and competitive pressure intertwine in academic environments. The human cost. Meanwhile, Kevin Jiang's family endured the long legal process with quiet strength. His fiancée, Zion, withdrew from public view. Friends said she focused on faith and healing, avoiding interviews or statements. At memorial services, Kevin's military comrades spoke about his optimism and integrity. One said, "Kevin always talked about service, how every choice should make the world better. That's what hurts most. He lived what he believed." Detectives, too, carried the weight of the case. Hall later remarked in an internal report, "This one reminded us that violence can hide behind intellect. It can sit in a lab, wear a white coat, and still plan harm." A question of accountability. By late 2021, the case was moving toward trial. Prosecutors assembled hundreds of pages of evidence, ballistic tests, cell tower maps, and witness statements. The defense focused on procedural issues, challenging digital warrants and forensic interpretations. Still, the physical and circumstantial evidence formed a strong chain. Investigators knew that trials don't guarantee closure. Even with conviction, the emotional vacuum left behind by Kevin's death would remain. Yet the case had already become a study in contrast. Two gifted young men, one whose promise was ended, another whose brilliance darkened into obsession. Chapter 3, The Long Pursuit. The courtroom in New Haven Superior Court was quiet when the defendant entered for the first time. It was April 2022, almost 14 months after Kevin Jiang's death. Reporters sat in the back rows, notebooks ready, cameras forbidden. The man at the defense table wore a mask and glasses, his posture stiff, his eyes downcast. Qin Xianpan faced charges of murder and possession of a firearm without a permit. Behind him sat his parents, who had flown in from Massachusetts. Across the aisle, members of Kevin's family, his mother, father, and fiancé, filled the front row. Between them stretched a gulf of grief that no verdict could close. The first hearings. The prosecution began with a steady narrative. Pan had driven to Connecticut on February 6, 2021, followed Kevin Jeong along Lawrence Street, rammed his car, and shot him multiple times at close range. Then, he fled north, abandoned one vehicle, and disappeared across state lines. Each statement was grounded in evidence, surveillance footage, phone data, ammunition links, and witness testimony. Defense attorneys countered that while Pan's presence in New Haven was suspicious, there was no direct eyewitness placing him with a gun at the exact moment of the shooting. They hinted at gaps in the timeline and suggested that some forensic traces could be misinterpreted. The hearings stretched for weeks. The judge listened patiently, often pausing proceedings to clarify details for the record. The digital map. One of the most powerful presentations came from the digital forensics unit. Using layered graphics, investigators reconstructed the timeline minute by minute. 8:24 p.m. Kevin's car appears on a city traffic camera heading north on Lawrence Street. 8:26 p.m. A dark Lexus NX follows, matching the color and model registered to Pan. 8:32 p.m. Audio sensors record 6 gunshots. 8:33 p.m. The Lexus is seen speeding away toward the I-91 corridor. Cell tower logs placed Pan's phone in that same radius and later, near the Massachusetts border before shutting off. In court, the data specialist explained, these signals form a continuous path from Cambridge to New Haven, with no deviation or secondary source. The probability of another individual replicating that pattern with the same phone is functionally zero. The jury listened in silence. The forensic match. Next came the ballistic evidence. The medical examiner testified that Kevin Jeong sustained multiple gunshot wounds to the head and torso. The rounds were 9mm, jacketed ammunition. State laboratory technicians compared the recovered casings with ammunition found in Pan's possession upon arrest in Alabama. Microscopic striations matched, same manufacturer, same production batch, same or pattern on the casing rims. When the technician displayed magnified images on a projector, the identical marks drew murmurs across the room. The defense attempted to argue chain of custody issues, noting that the weapon recovered in Alabama was never conclusively proven to be the same used in Connecticut. The prosecution responded that even without the firearm, the combined digital, physical, and behavioral evidence formed a coherent chain. The fugitive narrative. U.S. Marshals took the stand to describe the manhunt. Their testimony painted a portrait of precision and calculation. After the shooting, Pan switched vehicles, ditched electronics, and traveled more than 1,000 miles south using cash. When arrested in Alabama, he possessed multiple fake IDs, disguises, and a handgun loaded with the same type of ammunition found at the crime scene. He had the technical knowledge to erase his trail, one marshal said. But in the end, he made small mistakes, the kind that catch up when the world is watching. The jurors looked at Pan as the officer spoke. He did not react. The families. Outside the courthouse, the human toll was visible. Kevin's parents stood together each morning before entering, often greeted by supporters from the Yale and New Haven communities. They carried framed photos of Kevin in uniform and in his graduation gown. Reporters noted their composure. Kevin's father told one journalist, "We are not here for anger. We are here for truth." On the other side, Pan's family remained mostly silent. Through their attorney, they expressed sorrow for the Jeong family's loss but maintained their son's innocence until proven guilty. The cultural parallels between the two families, both Chinese-American, both valuing education and sacrifice, deepened the tragedy. Two immigrant dreams had collided, one lost forever. Inside the mind, court documents revealed glimpses of Pan's psychological state. After his arrest, he underwent several mental evaluations. Experts described him as highly intelligent, methodical, but emotionally rigid, traits that could intensify under rejection or perceived humiliation. One report stated, "Subject demonstrates obsessive cognitive looping patterns, a fixation on perceived personal losses or grievances." Prosecutors argued this pattern aligned with his alleged motive, obsession with Kevin's fiancée, whose engagement he discovered shortly before the murder. The defense declined to use insanity as a plea, instead focusing on procedural defense and reasonable doubt. Academic institutions respond. During the trial, Yale and MIT both released official statements reaffirming their commitment to student safety and mental health resources. Faculty panels held discussions about how intense academic competition and isolation can blur warning signs. A Yale counselor remarked in an interview, "Kevin represented the best of what academia hopes for, service and brilliance combined." Pan's fall reminds us that intellect without empathy can become destructive. The story became a case study across universities on the intersections of ambition, emotional health, and cultural expectations. Closing arguments. After months of hearings, the prosecution delivered closing arguments that framed the narrative not as random violence, but as the endpoint of fixation. Kevin Jiang was not in the wrong place at the wrong time, the prosecutor said. He was targeted because someone could not accept the life he built, his love, his success, his peace. This was not a spontaneous act. It was premeditated. The defense countered, urging the jury to separate sympathy from certainty. There are gaps. There are assumptions. You must ask yourselves if the state has proven, beyond all reasonable doubt, that my client pulled that trigger. The courtroom was silent as both sides rested. The verdict. The jury deliberated for 3 days. When they returned, the judge read the verdict aloud. Guilty of murder. Gasps and quiet sobs filled the room. Kevin's mother covered her face. Pan sat motionless, his expression unreadable. The judge thanked the jurors for their service and announced sentencing for a later date. Outside, reporters waited as the Jiang family exited the courthouse. They made no long statements, only brief words from Kevin's father. Justice does not bring peace, but it brings truth. Sentencing. At the sentencing hearing, prosecutors sought the maximum penalty allowed under Connecticut law. The defense asked for leniency, citing Pan's lack of prior criminal record and his family's cooperation. The judge spoke calmly. The court recognizes the tragedy on both sides. One life taken, another destroyed. But justice must weigh the gravity of choice, and this was a deliberate act. Pan was sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. As marshals led him from the courtroom, he glanced briefly toward Kevin's family. They did not look back. The aftermath. Months later, life in New Haven returned to quiet rhythm. The street where the murder occurred was unchanged, except for a small plaque beneath a lamppost that read, "In memory of Kevin Jiang, February 6, 2021, Servant, Scholar, Soldier." At Yale, a scholarship was established in his name to support students pursuing environmental service. At MIT, faculty created a forum on ethical responsibility in science, a place to discuss the pressures that shape young researchers. The story rippled far beyond academia. It became a cautionary case in national media about the unseen emotional toll of high achievement and the dangers of unresolved obsession. Reflection. Detective Hall, who had led the investigation from day one, kept a single photograph from the case, the image of Kevin's car under the streetlights, headlights still on. He often said it reminded him why the work mattered. In an interview years later, Hall reflected, "People think murder is about rage or chaos. But sometimes it's about silence, the kind that grows inside someone until it breaks the surface." He paused, then added, "Kevin's story isn't just about death. It's about how brilliance can meet darkness, and how a single decision can rewrite two lives forever." Legacy. Kevin Jiang's fiancée eventually finished her studies and moved away from Connecticut. In a rare written statement, she said, "Kevin lived with light in him. That's what I choose to remember, not the moment he was taken, but the years he gave." At military memorials, his name was read among those who served with honor. His professors continued to cite his research in sustainable resource management. Even in silence, his work endured.